Please silence all electronic devices.
We've got a chance still to, as they say, flatten the curve. And the math works out that if we all make a little bit of a sacrifice here, all of us will be a lot better off.
You know, one thing I think we do really well is North Carolinians take care of North Carolinians. And I think you're seeing this again.
Any further discussion or debate?
From the 4th Estate Bunker on West Jones Street in downtown Raleigh, this is the WUNC Politics Podcast. I'm Jeff DeBeery. Glad to have you along, as always, on what is a wild and different kind of Friday. It is very much coronavirus, and that is what we're talking about today in our review of state politics. What is happening? What might soon be happening? Becky Gray from the conservative John Locke Foundation is here, along with Rob Schofield from the progressive NC Policy Watch.
Hi, guys.
Hello.
How are you?
Feeling good right now.
Yeah, okay. Doing just fine.
This is an extremely fluid, rapidly moving story. So full disclosure off the top, we're recording a few minutes past noon on Friday at our legislative studio. The governor has called for no gatherings of more than 100 people for the next month across the state. Major sporting events canceled, universities shuttering, and a growing number of public school districts also are going to be closed moving forward. We learned that most district and superior court proceedings will close beginning Monday. Are there other additional recommendations that state or municipal leaders need to make right now?
Well, I think it's pretty clear that we've got to not have these large gatherings. I'm a leader in a local church, in fact, where we had a conversation about this last night, and we decided that our church would be suspending any services and gatherings, Wednesday night meetings, and I would think that the governor would, at a minimum, be urging other similar congregations, similar sized congregations, to take similar action, because it's a drag. This is no fun. It's going to be a sacrifice for everyone for a prolonged period, but we've got a chance still to, as they say, flatten the curve. And the math works out that if we all make a little bit of a sacrifice here, all of us will be a lot better off.
Rob, I absolutely agree with you. And one area, Jeff, that you did not mention is the legislative announcements that have been done. Of course, the General Assembly is not officially in session right now, but they are holding, or were holding, oversight committees and study committees and those kind of things. And those have been called off for at least the end of the month, I think. You know, so we'll see. No word on whether or not they will proceed with the end of April short session. I think Senator Berger this week indicated, you know, we're going to kind of watch and see. For right now, everything's on. I understand that there are some conversations within the caucuses of perhaps legislative action. I don't know what that means at this point, so I don't, you know, want to really say, but they are taking things under advisement. We mentioned what the governor's been doing. The General Assembly is also doing some things preemptively.
Although I would say that there may be a strong case to be made that, although I care very much for this, the health of all the people in this legislative building here, there may be a need at some time before the end of April for us to take some important legislative action to address some of the crises and needs that are going to be coming up. And it may be necessary to take some extraordinary steps to figure out a way to bring people together and to stay as safe as possible, but to get some stuff done.
As we record this, again, a few minutes after noon on Friday, the Durham Performing Arts Center remains open. There are performances of Les Mis through this weekend. I spoke to somebody this morning on the ticket line who said scheduled performances are going to carry through next week. As a reminder, DPAC, if people don't know or have not been there, has a seating capacity of 2,700 people. And as, I guess, also a contextual reminder, the governor did not issue an order. He made these recommendations yesterday. DPAC has to close, does it not?
Well, I think that a gubernatorial order to close is different than the suggestions that he made yesterday of any gathering of 100 people or more should be reconsidered. I thought it was interesting that DPAC is open, but Broadway has closed down. So, you know, we do see sort of these outliers. And now, you know, the news is not that we're not having the double NCAA tournament, that we're not doing the ACC tournament, that we're, you know, putting a halt on the hockey season. It's that, you know, DPAC is going ahead with their performances. So I don't know the ins and outs of that. And of course, Jeff, you know, the thing about it is, one thing I think we have to remember is people are assuming personal responsibility for this. And so although DPAC is open, they are having the performances, I'd be interested to see how many people actually go and participate in that.
I think it's pretty irresponsible on their part. They obviously are an important institution in our community here in the Triangle, and I think it sends a very unfortunate message. I think they really should rethink their position.
One other point of full disclosure, perhaps two points. Becky, you and I are both season ticket holders for the Broadway series at DPAC. I've been there dozens of times. They run a fantastic shop. So I'm personally just a little bit surprised that I even asked that question. But we'll see what happens. Again, as we've said several times, a very fluid situation. And meanwhile, it has struck me to this point, the state versus the federal response, it has seemed more calm and organized here in Raleigh, juxtaposed to Capitol Hill. Do y'all view it that way?
I absolutely do. I think that we have a history. You know, we have a history of dealing with natural disasters here in North Carolina quite recently, as a matter of fact. You know, one thing I think we do really well is North Carolinians take care of North Carolinians. And I think you're seeing this again.
Well, obviously, I generally agree. I think that President Trump's performance this week, this terrible, dreadful, ad-libbed speech that he gave, in which he again gave incorrect information, seemed to sort of ad-lib it. I really think he is, in that moment, failed one of the critical tests of his presidency. And I think, even right afterwards, his staff was sort of cleaning up the mess and saying, well, he didn't exactly mean that. There was no reassurance for people. There was no sense that the federal government is really on top of this. It wouldn't have been hard to do a better job, frankly, than President Trump did. But I think Governor Cooper has been very sober and resolute and clear-headed in his comments. And at least at the state level, there's some reason to feel some confidence that the leadership is doing a good job.
Well, and I think, too, if we're going to look to Washington to solve this problem with the gridlock, whether it's in the White House or whether it's in Congress, I'm not sure that's the place where we as North Carolinians want to look. Thank goodness the General Assembly has put money aside so that we have close to $2 billion at our disposal right now in order to react to these rainy days, and this is in fact a rainy day. So thank goodness we've got that. Again, I understand the leaders of the General Assembly are talking, moving as to, you know, what the next steps might be. I think North Carolina again can be a model to show other states how we do things and how we're going to react to this.
Well, if that were true, the North Carolina General Assembly would have expanded Medicaid. We would not have cut public health spending in the state by 28% over the last decade during a time when our population has risen by 12%. I disagree. I do not think the General Assembly has left us in a good spot. Great to have some money in the bank. We could have money in the bank and have a robust public infrastructure to deal with these issues. The legislature was proposing to cut the Medicaid budget by $42 million. Secretary Cohen had to push back against them this past week about the proposed cuts that they were trying to implement in health care in our state. I totally disagree that we're in as good a position as we should be. We should be in a much stronger position. Fortunately, I think the governor's taking strong action, and I hope the General Assembly will get on board.
State does have a lot of money in the rainy day fund. There is also some money in reserves in unemployment fund. I would only add as a note of context to your point, Rob, some of the Medicaid funding has been tied up in the big budget debate, and some of it was also tied up. The legislature did send the governor a separate bill to fully fund DHHS, and he vetoed that as well. So this is a complicated issue.
No doubt about that.
I want to continue. Go ahead briefly.
No, just real quick. The most vulnerable population that we are seeing with this coronavirus is elderly people and people with compromised systems. That is the exact population that our current Medicaid population falls under. So, I wish that the governor had not vetoed that bill that would have put the Medicaid transformation into place. I think not expanding Medicaid was absolutely the right thing to do as we move into this to make sure that our most vulnerable population are protected in this.
Make sense to have a 500,000, maybe 600,000 uninsured people in this state at a moment when we want them to call their physicians. We want them not to be thinking, gosh, should I go to the doctor? No, I can't afford it. There are all kinds of essential public things like that. North Carolina is not a model. We're trailing the nation in this essential public health service.
Cooper's Medicaid expansion program would have cost $6 billion.
That's just preposterous.
And 80% of those people in the population are able-bodied, childless, working-age adults. They are not. We need to make sure, and thank goodness the General Assembly has put this into place, that the most vulnerable population is in a position that we can ride this storm out.
All right. I want to talk about there are economic impacts here as well as we talk about coronavirus, and we're likely only beginning to understand those. Yes, the volatile stock market, but much more importantly, us rank-and-file citizens, workers. I'm thinking about state employees with inadequate paid sick time, hourly workers who rely on large events, ACC basketball tournament, Canes games, concerts, all sorts of events. People who rely upon those events in order to get paid, to pay the bills. Also servers at restaurants and bars. We don't know yet what kind of impact this is going to have on the service industry. A lot of lost wages are on the horizon. What is the role of state government in trying to lift these folks up?
I think we clearly have a role. I think the governor has mentioned that. We've heard that from the General Assembly. You know, that's why we've got this savings account set aside for things like this. This is what it's been used for before, as hurricanes and other natural disasters have hit, to get people back on their feet, to get us sustained through this kind of thing. And again, to rely on North Carolina rather than relying on Congress or Washington to do this is the right direction to take. So I think we're poised to do that and to offer help for those people. We're already hearing that is absolutely one of the considerations. I think we need to be careful as we move forward to make sure that the right people are getting the right amount of money and that we don't overreact to this, but that we are able to offer a safety cushion for folks. And also, you know, a lot of this, actually there was a great report on NPR this week about the after effects and the unintended things that are school children and, you know, meals and nutrition and those kind of things. And there was a long discussion about it. And the host of the show, I wish I could remember which one, but the host of the show said, you know, we may all need to pitch in on this. And so I think we're going to be looking at not just how government can help, but how those of us in the individual, you know, Rob mentioned his church, you know, with the faith community and with other people all the way through of pitching in.
But before I go to Rob, there's $2 billion in the rainy day fund there. Is between, I believe, $2 and $3 billion in the unemployment fund. How, and it's early, but do you have a sense or do you have an opinion on how that money, how we could
potentially
help people?
How we roll it out and where it's used? I don't think we know that yet. I don't think we know that yet, but I think that it's important to monitor that so that we make sure that the people that do need help are getting that help.
A decade of disinvestment in essential public structures and services has left us in a very, very vulnerable position. A couple of billion dollars sitting in an account is chicken feed. It's not going to be anywhere near what we need. We have, for instance, over the last decade, completely eviscerated North Carolina's unemployment insurance system. We have the absolute last in the nation in terms of benefits, in terms of eligibility, in terms of how much money we give to people. Less than 9% of the unemployed even get benefits right now in North Carolina. For instance, there are a million things we should be doing. The Department of Labor, the Trump Department of Labor, announced yesterday that we should be enacting new rules to liberalize our unemployment insurance eligibility criteria. That is the kind of step that should be taken immediately. And it's preposterous that we are 52nd, actually, when you count Puerto Rico in the nation, when it comes to how generous we are with unemployment insurance. We're going to need a lot more than a couple of billion dollars if this is a genuine recession that takes hold. And we should have had a system in place for public health, for just an array of core public services that are torn and threadbare now as a result of a decade of disinvestment. A couple of billion dollars in a rainy day fund is not going to do anything close to what we need.
Well, we're in a position to respond to this, and I think, you know, having a healthy economy is the best way to respond to these kind of things.
Anything that you two would offer personally about how you will carry on or not carry on in the days and weeks to come here moving forward? Both going to hunker down? I mean, I'm going home this afternoon, candidly. I don't know when I'll leave the house again or how many of those outside the house trips we'll be making.
Well, I think, you know, I mean, you bring up a really good point. You know, when it comes to this and this public health crisis, not just in North Carolina, but and not just in this country, but across the world, you know, we all have a responsibility for it. And so, you know, I mean, Jeff, I think that's a good point. I think that we should all listen to what Mandy Cohen has been telling us, what the CDC has been telling us about washing hands, social distancing, staying home if you're sick, you know, particularly the older, more vulnerable populations, you know, be careful there. You know, I'll tell you something that I'm going to be looking for, too. You know, as this thing moves forward and we see where the needs are, if there's a way that I can contribute, if that's to a fund to make sure that kids whose schools are closed are getting getting a lunch or, you know, whatever that is. I'm going to be certainly looking for opportunities to contribute where I can, just individually. You know, I mean, it may not be much, but I think if all of us are looking that way, you know, this is a problem where we all come together, and I think North Carolinians help North Carolinians, and I'm going to be looking for those kind of opportunities in addition to taking that personal responsibility.
I don't disagree with any of that. Obviously, we'll all be doing our best we can. We wrote a news in our newsletter at NC Policy Watch this morning. We explained how we're going to be doing our best to protect ourselves, to protect our reporters, but we'll also be covering the news, covering aspects of this story that are not going to be well reported. The most vulnerable people whose stories don't get told, the prisoners, the farm workers, people like that who are going to be affected by this as well. For me, the thing that people can do most and ought to do most is to, especially for people who are old enough to hearken back to what happened after 9/11, was the failed opportunity that came at that time for our country to come together, for our leaders to talk about communal sacrifice and coming together for the common good. And we need to do that. We need to be prepared for the fact that there is going to need to be sacrifice from all of us. And we should be urging our public leaders, our elected officials, to ask that of us. People should be speaking out on social media about that need. This isn't just about hunkering down and taking care of yourself and, you know, shopping when you can. It's also about demanding public policies that are about responding to this crisis and preparing ourselves for future crises, which are going to be coming down the line as this huge population on this overstrained planet continues to grow and continues to use up the resources and continues to face the impacts of the global environmental crisis. We're going to have more like this, and we've got to start investing in the kinds of infrastructure that can allow us to survive and thrive. If it's just we're going to go from crisis to crisis and to rely on charity and hunkering down, I don't think that's going to be enough.
Rob Schofield is director of NC Policy Watch. Becky Gray is senior vice president at the John Locke Foundation. Enjoy your weekends.
Thank you.
So light and graceful, not a step was wasteful. Daddy was a dancing man.
Don't forget that you can subscribe to the podcast at iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever it is that you get that on-demand listening. Check out previous reviews of North Carolina politics with Becky and Rob, and also some of our other long-form one-on-one conversations. We'll have another one of those podcasts next week. I'll sit down. I already did, in fact. But you'll hear the final conversation, the final cut, a conversation with Greg Gebhardt, who ran for lieutenant governor. He was seeking the Republican nomination during the primary, and he came up short. And we're going to talk about what it's like to run for political office and not get the outcome that you had desired. So keep an ear out for that conversation. In the meantime, we'll have up-to-date coverage on what is happening with this coronavirus at our website, wnc.org, and also, of course, on our airwaves, 91.5 FM. Thanks for tuning in and listening. For Becky and Rob, I'm Jeff.